Okay, Rabbi Issa, we're learning Siman Tovresh Pei Zayin tonight, and we're looking forward to hearing some Dibrei Torah at the second part of the shiur by Mr. Daigle. So, but I want to just complete one important yesoid, which we haven't mentioned yesterday with regards to Siman Tovresh Pei Vav, and I think it's worthwhile mentioning that. In Zev Gimel, the Mishtabua says, it's very important and it's very controversial. That's what's so interesting about it. In Sivkot Ches, the Mishtabua says, when he talks about the 3 days Purim, so Mishtabua in Sivkot Ches says, Yicholim bnei ir, citizens of a city are allowed to, lesakein, to establish, be'askoma, agreement, a communal agreement, uvecheirem aleihem, and they can even make a cheirem on themselves, and on the future generations. Lasso is to make Purim, a designated Purim, beyoim on the day shenase boi neis. On a day that a neis happened, they're allowed to establish a Purim. So Abba said, what the Mishnah is telling us is that if there is a particular miracle that happens, or a particular grand event that happens in a particular city or community, then that community is allowed to, and it looks like are meant to, make a designated Purim on that day. A celebration not only for that generation where the miracle occurred, but in fact also for future generations too. And this was done throughout centuries. It's well known there was something called Frankfurter Purim, when there was also a very harsh decree of some evil governor that at one point wanted to do something, and they were saved at last one. And they made, I've forgotten how the date, it was Purim the Frankfurt, on that particular place in Frankfurt. They made a Purim on that day. And in fact, Chassam Sofer, who came from Frankfurt, he was as a child, he left quite young, but he was, as a young child, he was in Frankfurt. He kept that particular day as a Purim all future years. As the Mishnah Berurah says, on him and on future generations. What does that mean, Purim on that day? What does it actually mean? It does not mean Shlachmonos and Matonos Ligurim. I was about to say, it doesn't mean masks, but nowadays, you know, it could be any mitzvah. Well, I'm not sure, but it certainly does mean no tanis, no tachanun. It means a suda, which probably is considered the suda's mitzvah, and that's the Purim, and that is to be kept every future year. It's nice to bring two opposing. How should we say? There is perhaps basis. Those who keep Yom HaTzmaut, may I mention, those who keep Yom HaTzmaut, so there may be some parallel to that, and they probably the ones who, I mean, it's the first years of the establishment, you know, everybody felt very much it was an Asian, a miracle year, and that's probably where they came from, without going into, I'm just quoting that. And in the beauty of that is in the same sentence, in Satzma and other Chassidus, the days that the Rebbes were saved from the Holocaust, and from other very great miracles, such as the in Chabad, there's one particular day that the Rebbe was freed from the prison, and when the Chassidus Rebbe was released from the was able to exit and escape from the. From the danger of the Holocaust, that these days are celebrated, not only on that, but for future generations as well. And the source of that is that Mishtabu here. Well, it's not Mishtabu, it's a Gemara, but that's what it's about. So to celebrate many families, when there is sometimes families that have certain, you know, I know one particular family, they had a sefer, you know, there was a fire in the house, was Baruch Hashem, at the end, they were fine and everything was okay, but there was really a nace there. And they therefore celebrate on that particular day. That particular family celebrate on that particular day every future year. They had the Suda and the Suda Zedah, etc., etc. That is what the Mishnah is referring to. Right, okay. It can be both. So he is referring to a nace that happened to a city, such as a danger by a governor, by a monarch, or anything like that. Or by, it could also be a fire, or a safe, which was very common in the Middle Ages. So it's referring to that. But the same concept also can also apply to families as well. Okay, Siman Tovrei Pei Zayin, Chiyuv HaKiras HaMegillah. This is now going to Chiyuv HaMegillah. I will point out that Hilchas Chanukah are called Hilchas Chanukah. Hilchas Purim are called in Shulchan Aruch. Hilchas Purim are called? Hilchas Megillah. You will not find anywhere Hilchas Purim but in Hilchas Megillah. Because Megillah, I suppose, is the essence and the most important mitzvah. So it's always to be found in Hilchas Megillah. So Sechayev Adam Nikro is Megillah Belaila. Shulchan Aruch Sif Alas tells us that a person obligated to read the Megillah Belaila by night, Velachsoy, and to repeat it, Velashnoisa, to hear it a second time, Bayoim by day. Two obligations. They are not of the same level of obligations. They're not on the same chiyuv, but there is, at the end of the day, we've got two times we've got to listen to the Megillah, by night and by day. When are these obligations precisely? Shalaylo, says Shulchan Aruch, by night. Zmano kalalaylo, you can be fulfilling the mitzvah of Kiyas HaMegillah the entire night, really. Veshal yoim, and the obligation of the Kiyas HaMegillah by day. Zmano kalalaylo. Is the entire day. What does day mean? From Netzachama until the end of the day. And if you did read it earlier than that, before Netzachama, if you read it Balei Sashacha, which is the same than all the other mitzvahs we find, which are day-bound mitzvahs, you're meant to do them from Netzachama onwards. If you did them after Alois, which is a bit earlier than that, you're still Yotze with the Eved. Mishdebusif Kotn Aleph. Now it's important to know that Mishnah Berurah says Tetzik Chovim. You listen to Megillah by night for Tetzik Chovim. The truth is that people are always trying to get the earliest Nacht. The earliest Tetzik Chovim. Why? Because people are generally fasting and hungry. So you're trying to get the earliest. And therefore, there's actually quite extensive discussion in the Poskim what is Tetzik Chovim here. Because when is Nacht? So the consensus is that you can rely on a quite early Nacht, not on the Dereisa Nacht that we have on Motzei Shabbos. It could be an early Nacht, and that's fine because it is at the end of the day, it's the Rabbanon, and you may rely on the opinions that hold that it's an early Nacht, but it's got to be Nacht, so not from Shkia onwards. Now, why is it that we read the Megillah twice? You've cotton base top of the line over here. This is our memory of the Nes, of the miracle. That they cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They cried out on the day of their pain, of their suffering. They cried out by day and by night. So therefore, we also, parallel to that, we do the Megillah by night and by day. Seif based in Shulchan Aruch. Mevatlin Talmud Torah lishma b'kam Megillah. Very interesting. So the halacha is you are mevatel Talmud Torah to hear the Megillah. So if a person sits and learns with enormous asmada, should he stop now and listen to Megillah, or should he carry on learning? See the Gemara says Shulchan Aruch says mevatlin Talmud Torah. You do cancel. I'm learning Lishma Megillah for learning Megillah. Kal Mechoyim Lishma Mitzvah Shal Torah, which is even more so by other mitzvahs of Torah, Shekulam Nitchim Ibn Mikra Megillah, they're all pushed away because of Mikra Megillah. So not only Talmud Torah is pushed away, but in fact any other mitzvah, if you're engaged and active in any mitzvah, and time has come to kiss the Megillah, you've got to listen to the Megillah. She'en L'chodovah She'nitchim Ibn Mikra Megillah, because everything is pushed away for kiss the Megillah, besides, Mimeis Mitzvah, the only exclusion is Meis Mitzvah, somebody who dies, and is to be she'en L'chodovah, there's nobody there to bury him. Can it talk about Pegia boy? Somebody who meets that person who is dead and he needs to be buried. That person needs to first bury the Nifta and afterwards read. But any other mitzvah, Rabbi said, any other mitzvah is pushed away because of Kim Megillah. And now, the enigma and the mystery about this Shulchan Aruch is again, you push away Talmud Torah because of listening to the Megillah. Hold on a sec, there's something which is a bit bizarre over here. What's bizarre about this? You push away listening to Megillah because of the mitzvah Talmud Torah. Exactly. The strange thing is that Kiyas HaMegillah is certainly qualified as Talmud Torah. You know, pardon? Oh, very good. I want to get to that, but let's just get the question clear. Talmud Torah is any learning, any hearing, any listening to Nach, even without understanding, Kal V'chomer with understanding, is. If you hear Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim, even without much understanding, you're still Yotze, mitzvah de'iraisa of Talmud Torah. With regards to Gemara, with regards to Torah Shebal Peh, The Shulchan Rav says, if you don't understand, you're not Yotze. You've got to have some level of understanding. But certainly when it comes to Torah, Nevi'im, Muksuvim, even without understanding, you're Yotze the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Therefore, what do you mean? You push away Talmud Torah for Kriyas Megillah. That sounds like an incorrect statement. Talmud Torah, yeah, I understand. Kriyas Megillah is Talmud Torah in its own right. So you're not Mevatel Talmud. So this great Masmid who's learning 24-7, well, he's not Mevatel Torah by listening to Megillah, because missing Megillah is a mitzvah in its own right. The question is clear. I think it's a very, very solid question. Very solid question. Sigmoah, and the answer to that question is, how does Rav Frankel suggest? The answer is, the answer is that it's, we see from here, that's the, probably the proof, that's the ayah, that there is various levels of Talmud Torah. And Talmud Torah, this, if you learn and sit and learn Gemara, sit and learn Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, if you learn properly and you think about it and you learn it and you invest your koichs in it, that is on a far superior level of Talmud Torah than just hearing something without much thought and pondering. It's just like, good, yeah. Therefore, yes, and that's also called the Talmud Torah. So we learn from here that it's called Bittul Torah if you don't fulfill the top level of Talmud Torah. And you lower that, that's a level of Bittul Torah. Which Halacha Maaseh reminds me of the following story that happened to me. I was a younger man in Yerushalayim, and I was learning. And I had an evening chavrusa. This is the true story. Had an evening chavrusa in those days. You know, I still, you know, we still had evening. So I had an evening chavrusa. And we learned very gishmak. And then I was approached to learn in a particular yeshiva, which is around the corner, and in that, to learn with Bochim. To learn with Bochim. You know, your mom to learn with Bochim. So it was very good. I remember it was $250 a month, which was very good salary. So the question was as to whether, so I wasn't sure if I should go for it, because my question was that, you know, I'm learning definitely more solid learning with my chavusa. And then if I would go to learn with the Bocha, who was, you know, Bocha was not quite, you know, it was a bit. So the question was as to whether I should do that. So I asked Abisol Gantz that question. I lived not far from him, so I asked Abisol Gantz. And I remember I walked out of shul with him and asked him that question. It was a very interesting conversation. It was very, very interesting. We just went off other topics as well. But regarding this question, he told me the following. He says, listen, in principle, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. Because it's certainly considered Bittul Torah to some extent, because you're learning with your chavusa. I was learning karuvas then, and you know, you're learning you're learning up to your full capacity, and over there it's probably a little bit of a lower level of Talmud Torah. And he says the Gemara says, and he brought this very Shulchan Aruch that we're learning now, that it's considered Bittul Torah. Yes, there is an element of Bittul Torah, but not learning to your full potential. The proof is that it's considered. Kriyas Megillah is considered Bittul Torah. Why is it Bittul Torah? You know, you're listening to Novi. The answer is, yes, it is not the full highest level of learning. Therefore, it is considered Bittul Torah. But nevertheless, he says, I advise you to still take the job. Because, you know, Panos is something important, and even if you cover the month, you don't know what happens. I remember he spoke about your kid's going to have, you need to go to the dentist. That's quite expensive. I remember he spoke about that. He said, you know, dentist expenses are quite high, and, you know, you want to have your money on the side for dentist expenses. So he said, it's worth it. That's what he advised me to do, and that's what I did. Mostly in hindsight, I felt that I didn't really, wasn't such a bit literary because, you know, once you get into the teaching and the explaining, you know, probably wasn't so much a bit of doing anyway, but that's what Ibsol Gans told me at that point. So this concept, I think, is a really essential concept, that if a person doesn't fully learn with full according to his full koiches, that is considered level bit of toy. Okay. Pardon? Yes, that's a wow, very good comparison. Yes, very good. So we learned last week, we learned very, very good. We learned with regards to the halachas of writing on Chol HaMoed. We learned that if a person doesn't write on, is it a person allowed to write on Chol HaMoed Chiddush HaTorah? Why is a person allowed to write Chiddush HaTorah on Chol HaMoed? So the answer given, the Mishnah Berurah explains, because if you're not going to write the Torah now, you're going to have to do Chazorah next week of it, and you're going to lose new Torah And therefore, that's considered a bittul Torah to some extent. Therefore, you are allowed to write Chiddush HaTorah on Chalamet. But the Mishnah Berurah said that. What the Mishnah Berurah said is you're going to lose time then. You're going to lose time. You're going over something old and when you could have learned something new. So that's what Mishnah Berurah says. Yeah, it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay, yeah. Having said these introductory few seifim in Siman Tovah, we're looking forward to hearing some Divrei Torah. Yes.
Opportunity to thank Rabbi Patkas for all the kindness you put into the shiurim every week. Really appreciated. It's going to be my turn again. It says in the Pasuk in Shalach etc. V'kach Moshe et atzmos Yosef imo ki hishbea hashbia es b'nei Yisrael leimo v'kod yifakod elokim etchem v'chelisem et atzmos yizeh etchem. So Moshe busied himself. He took the bones of Yosef with him, for he had made the children of Israel swear, saying, God will surely remember you. This is Yosef saying this. God will surely remember you, and you shall bring my bones from here with you. So Moshe was busying himself fulfilling the wish of Yosef. How did Moshe know where Yosef was buried? This is from the Midrash Katan Chumah. Sirach told Moshe what the Egyptians had done with Yosef. There are two opinions why the Egyptians submerged his iron casket in the Nile. One opinion stating Maseches Sota is that they wanted his casket to remain there so that its waters should be blessed. Another opinion offered in Midrash Rabbah is that the Egyptians thought that as long as the remains of Yosef were to stay in Egypt, the Bnei Israel would not be able to leave, for Yosef made them swear to take his remains with them when they left. Sages said that Sarah, the daughter of Asher, remained alive from that generation. She informed Moshe where Yosef was buried.
Somebody can somebody mute themselves? I don't know who it is. Yeah, thank you.
The Egyptians had made an iron casket for him. They submerged it in the river Nile. Moshe went and stood up the Nile. He took a stone and graved the word Elashur, arise, ox, on it and threw it into the river. He called out, Yosef, Yosef, the time has come for the Holy One, blessed is he, to redeem his children. The divine presence is waiting for you. Yisrael, the clouds of glory are waiting for you. If you reveal yourself, all well and good, but if not, we are absolved from your oath. Thereupon Yosef's casket floated up to the surface. Moshe took it and left. This teaches you that God measures and pays a person with the same measure with which he measures others. Yosef involved himself in his father's burial, as it stated. Yosef went up to bury his father. He was the most prominent of all his brothers and considered a king. It is written, with him also went up chariots and horsemen. Therefore he merited to be taken out of his grave by Moshe. Moshe removed Yosef's bones from Egypt. There was no one in the world greater than Moshe, who was a king, as is stated concerning Moshe. There was a king in Ishuran. Therefore, Moshe merited the divine presence itself was involved in his burial. As is stated, meaning Hashem, God, buried him in the valley, etc. Furthermore, Yaakov was escorted by Paro's servants. The elders of Paro's government and the elders of Egypt also accompanied the funeral cortege to Canaan, where Yaakov was buried. Yosef was rewarded in that his coffin was accompanied by the divine presence, the ark, the Kohanim, the Levium, and the seven clouds of glory. Yosef's coffin was carried together with the ark of testimony in the wilderness. The nations of the world will say, what is the nature of these two arks? One of the arks was the two tablets, and the other one was Yosef. So the nations of the world would say, what is the nature of these two arks? And the Bnei Israel would say, this one is an ark of a deceased person, and this one is the ark of the one who lives eternally. They would say, is it usual for the dead to be carried together with the ark of the one who lives eternally? They would reply by saying, the deceased one who lives in this ark fulfilled all that was written in that ark. Similarly, Miriam waited for some time to see what would come of her brother Moshe, as it stated. The child's sister stood up herself at a distance to see what would become of him. Therefore, the Holy One, blessed is he, the clouds of glory, the Kohanim and the Levim, waited for Miriam in the wilderness for 7 days. As it stated, Miriam was isolated beyond the encampment for 7 days. And the people did not depart till Miriam was brought in. For Yosef had bound Bnei Israel by oath. He bound them by oath that they would bind their children by oath. He bound Bnei Israel by oath. Why did he bind his brothers with this oath and not his own children? He said to himself, if I adjure my children, the Egyptians will not permit them to bury me. Should my son say to them, our father permit us to remove his father for burial, so why not permit us to do this for him? They would answer, your father is a king. Therefore Yosef adjured his brothers. Another explanation, Yosef said to his brothers, our father came down to Egypt of his own free will. I took him back to Canaan because I was forced to. Therefore I bind you by oath that you return me to the place Shechem from where you kidnapped me. And they did as he asked, as stated, and the bones of Yosef, which the Bnei Israel brought up from Egypt, they buried in Shechem. He will surely remember you. Pakad yifakad. He will remember you in Egypt. He will remember you at the sea. He will remember you in the wilderness. And he will remember you at the brooks of Arnon. He will remember you in this world. He will remember you in the world to come.
Shabbos, everybody. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.